Set your course for the Huff
Takes Podcast.
Welcome to Huff Takes. I'm Eric Geller.
I'm Grace Seegers.
And I'm Haley Birdwilt.
And in this episode, we're going to return to our discussion of Ahsoka. The first season of the show ended recently on Disney Plus. And in our last episode, we talked about the main characters of the show. Of course, Ahsoka herself. We talked about Sabine, Ezra, and Thrawn. In this episode, I want to turn to some of the secondary characters and some of the themes that were a little bit more in the background, but still very important to the future of Ahsoka, if it gets a second season, which is still not confirmed, and the future of this era of Star Wars storytelling in general. I want to start by looking at the villains of the show. Baylan and Shin, they were not your average Darksiders. They were not your average villains, but I guess I'm interested in exploring a little bit. Did we think that they worked as villains? Were they interesting enough, or were they sort of cardboard cutout villains, even though they were not typical, you know, Darksiders? Grace, maybe we could start with you. What did you think of, we'll start with Baylan.
I really liked Baylan in particular as a character. I thought the late Ray Stevenson did a great job with his character and injecting some nuance into a character that very much could have been a cardboard cutout of, former Jedi gone bad, sort of. I think he did a very good job of showing there were depths to this character. And I'm very sad that we're not going to see him play Baylan anymore, because I think he did a really great job and really made me engaged with the character, which is important because despite my enjoyment of his performance, I kept being a little bit frustrated because I wanted to know more, and he was just so enigmatic. And I understand that they would likely offer answers in the second season, if there is a second season, but he was almost too mysterious for me. I wanted to know more about him. I grabbed the morsels that we got. And like I said, I think Ray Stevenson did a great job, and I'm sad we won't see him in particular exploring further facets of the character. But I wish there had been a bit more to go on with that character, because it just, if it hadn't been for his great performance, I don't know if I would have enjoyed him as much.
Haley, what did you think of Baylan? Do you agree with that take?
I just think Ray Stevenson was such an incredible actor. Sort of like you were saying, very enigmatic and just sort of draws your attention during the show. I think I saw an interview that Dave Filoni did recently where he said he was like talking to Ray about the character, and he was like, "Ray, you have to remember you're the bad guy." And Ray was like,
right,
am I? Like, am I actually the bad guy? And I think it's kind of hilarious to sort of see that peek through the curtain of, like, we definitely got that vibe while watching it, that he was trying to sort of straddle both worlds and not be a typical, cruel kind of villain, but a, like, he disagrees with them for some kind of, like it all, you sort of get a sense that he still has, like, a moral compass, but it's unclear what that is. So I don't know, I found it really fascinating, but I do agree, I think there was kind of a shortcoming in the storytelling itself, which was it leaned very much into mystery and not answering questions until the very last, like for example, what the falling out between Sabine and Ahsoka was, we find out in like a throwaway line at the like the second to last episode, or possibly even the last episode. And there might be like a view within the production staff there that is like more advanced storytelling, more nuanced, but it's not. It just leaves your viewers like wondering what's going on. So for example, with his character in particular, he like talked about restarting some kind of cycle, and it's like there's so many fan theories about what that means. And it's like, it's just gonna be hard for them to follow through on whatever that plan was, even if it was great. Obviously, of course, because of his tragic death, but also because it just seems kind of unclear if they're gonna like renew or do a season 2 at all. So it's like, I don't know, my most frustrating TV show watching moments are kind of that, in that vein of like, is anything, like, are we ever going to get answers?
Yeah.
So yeah, to the extent that I didn't like him, it's because I want to know what he's doing. And I found him so interesting that I do want to know what he's doing. But I, like, as a character, I thought he was great. I'm really sad that he obviously won't be, you know, portraying that character going forward. I hope they don't do some, like, creepy AI zombie situation. That's just my personal opinion. But I've seen ways that they could, like, possibly write around it. I mean, I of course, follow, like, the Reddit threads of people trying to, like, guess what he's up to and, like, how they could... like right around it in the next season. And one of the suggestions was like, well, whatever he does could be just like so earth shaking that the other characters like have to respond to it. And that like we find out what it is almost immediately, even if he's not there. But it's like, I don't know. That just seems kind of tough to pull off, in a show like this. So, but on the whole, I mean, I just thought he did an excellent job.
Yeah, I agree. I of course he was, you know, really excellent in the role. And definitely, we miss Ray Stevenson, both, you know, as Star Wars fans who enjoyed his performance, but also just as human beings who are very sad about his untimely passing. And of course it does mean that, you know, whatever happens in season two, if there is a season two, it's going to probably have to be very different. I guess I will add one note of criticism, which is I liked his kind of enigmatic personality to a degree, but there were moments where they had him say things that, much like our discussion of the World Between Worlds sequence in our previous episode, there wasn't a lot of there when you dig beneath the surface of what he was saying. And it's most prominent when he's telling Ahsoka, you know, you're just, essentially he says like, you know, you're just like your master. You have that darkness in you. You're responsible for all this death and pain. And, you know, that's essentially why I'm going to fight you now. And it was another one of those moments where I thought, you know, that just doesn't make any sense. Ahsoka hasn't done anything that would earn that kind of criticism of her. She hasn't been responsible for anywhere near the kind of death and pain that Darth Vader caused. And I just don't understand what he was referencing. I don't understand what was the point of having him say it. And it felt like
talking about when she was framed for that bombing.
I guess that's, so he was a Jedi at the time and almost certainly would have heard about her being accused. But I feel like he would have heard about her being exonerated too.
Maybe he's.
I don't know. It was just very weird to me, and particularly because otherwise I thought his character had a lot of promise. Even if, as you said, you know, there were a lot of things that he said when he's talking about his frustrations with the Jedi, when he's talking about how he wanted Shin, his apprentice, to be a different kind of warrior. It made me wonder what's going on here. What is his backstory? What exactly does he mean in terms of his disappointments with the Jedi? And obviously we never got those answers, and that was very disappointing. I will say I think it's possible, given where we see him at the end of the season, that something mystical could happen and they could continue telling a story that involves him without actually needing Ray Stevenson to portray him. I don't know exactly what that would look like, but I think it, you know, we'll get to it at the end of our episode here. But the season ends on quite an interesting cliffhanger with Baylan's character, and I think that could go in some directions that might allow them to write around this. But yeah, I very sad to see him pass away, and very happy with just the fact that he was introduced into the universe at all, because I do think he held a lot of promise, particularly as a teacher to Shin. And I do want to briefly talk about her, because she had some very funny lines in this season, and it was nice to see a little bit of humor from her. I really like the moment when she's pursuing Ahsoka's ship through space, and on the bridge of the big ring ship, Morgan is like, oh, you know, we'll take him down. Don't worry about it. We got this. And obviously she fails to take Ahsoka down, and Shin says something like, you know, great job, you almost got her, which was very funny, and not necessarily what you expect from a villain. So I enjoyed that. I liked just her general kind of feral nature. I thought it was fun to have a character like that who is just this barely contained ball of fury, and watching Baylan kind of restrain her was interesting, and then watching her go off the handle when he wasn't there was also interesting. Not a ton to say about her, just because, again, we don't know where she comes from, we don't know where Baylan found her, and we don't, of course, know where she's going, but anyone have any thoughts about Shin?
I think my problems with Baylan and Shin are emblematic of the biggest problems, in my opinion, as a whole, which is kind of the lack of pacing or the difficult, I don't know how to say, but the pacing was not great. And sort of the opacity in the storytelling, because as you say, Eric, she had great vibes, the vibes impeccable, but as a character, that's all she was pretty much. She was just there to exude her particular vibes and occasionally fight Sabine, which is fine. You know, Darth Maul has like two lines in Phantom Menace. He's all vibes. So I'm not saying that being all vibes is a bad thing. It's just that I feel like I can't form a strong opinion on Shin in particular because we just don't know her at all. And Baylan at least had the benefit of being connected to this potential otherworldly plot and having his own agenda. Shin's just kind of there. We don't know anything about her. And again, I guess the assumption is that we'll figure that out in season two, but I just don't think it was very good storytelling to have these characters be so opaque and to introduce them and then, in my opinion, really not do enough with them. So I'm not opposed to Shin. I liked her. I thought she was interesting, but I don't really have anything to say in her favor either, because I don't feel that she made much of a mark. I don't think that's her fault or the actress who plays her fault. I think that's just the way the story was told. It didn't give her much to work with.
Yeah, I thought she was an interesting character. And I liked her bangs. Evan called her the Gen Z, like, Jedi, which she's not a Jedi.
She is absolutely the first TikTok Force user. No question about that.
So I enjoyed that. I thought it was kind of fun. And sort of your description, Eric, is very apt about being kind of feral. And I don't mind the not having lines and not having much, like, background, but it does sort of, make it harder to, like, care about her or, like, or make her actions, like, sort of resonate with the audience. So I don't know. I, like, when she joined some, like, random gang of, like, I don't know, who were the bandits at the end of the season? I thought that was kind of silly. So I don't know. I was disappointed with the fact that they didn't, like, expand on her character very much over the, like, course of the season. But, like, maybe they will next season. I think, like, in the same way that Baylan is kind of mysterious and maybe, like, something different, kind of like what you were saying, Grace, I think she has the potential to be kind of different, which I always like.
Yeah, I think she just didn't... It felt like they were just trying to do too much in this season, and I think she's a great example of that. She has promise as, again, a different type of Darksider, somebody who, you know, isn't necessarily in it to kill Jedi, but we gotta understand why she is in it, and we don't know, and they don't make it clear here. By the way, speaking of villains who people invested grand hopes in and then nothing happened... Were you folks also following the theories that Ezra was the Inquisitor? And did you see the just the internet reaction when Ahsoka, I think it was Ahsoka, just sort of cut him down in like 2 seconds and then he floated away? I guess he was like a Night Sister or magic creation, but again, we don't know anything about him. I thought it was great that people were like, well, this has got to be Ezra, or maybe this is, I saw some people.
Guy? What was his name?
It was the masked guy. It was the one who dies on whatever the planet is where they open the portal.
That was kind of weird. He just, like, I don't know, went away.
I remember people saying that it was Barriss Offee from Clone Wars. I mean, the people were very invested.
What's funny is I'm pretty sure Lucas, or like the Disney or Lucasfilm Twitter account was like hyping up, who is it? Yeah. Apparently it's no one.
Well, anytime you put a mask on a bad guy, you're going to have people saying that it's Ezra and that it's Barriss.
Someone was saying it was Kanan Jarrus, like reincarnated as a bad guy.
I love that. What a chaotic theory. I love that.
It would have been very chaotic.
Well, let's talk a little bit about A hero of the show, and certainly a hero from the Rebels family, but somebody who mostly faded into the background, Hera Syndulla. We got to start by talking about the portrayal, as we've done with all the other Rebels characters. I would love to hear your thoughts on Mary Elizabeth Winstead's performance here as Hera. I will just say, for my part, I don't think she has what it takes. I don't think she does a good job. She has a similar problem to Rosario Dawson. She doesn't really nail that kind of combination of warmth and grit that I think makes Hera so wonderful in Rebels. It's very hard, obviously, for anybody to live up to Vanessa Marshall's sublime performance as Hera, but I think Mary Elizabeth Winstead just did not come close.
Yeah, my reaction was very much on the scale of meh to not a fan. And
that's your scale? Wait, does your scale have any room for a positive reaction?
Well, that was the scale specifically for this performance.
Oh, I see.
I have a much larger scale just generally, but for this performance. And again, I don't necessarily think that's Mary Elizabeth Winstead's fault, because she is a good actress. I've seen her in other things in which she has been excellent. And this is just not one of them. And I think there were a lot of forces working against her. The prosthetics, the really weird cakey makeup that they used for her.
Yeah.
Like, how could they make Twi'leks look really good in 1983 and yet somehow in 2023 they look super fake? I did not like the makeup for her at all, or the contacts. I agree with you that she lacked a lot of the warmth of Hera. A lot of times I was wondering why she was even there. What did she even bring to this story? And I'm saying this as a huge Hera fan. It seemed very fan servicey that she was there at all, but then not, because the actual portrayal of her was rather lackluster. It's not like I have anything against Mary Elizabeth Winstead. It's just I don't think this was a great portrayal of a beloved character, and I was definitely disappointed. I was skeptical of Ahsoka the series as a Rebels sequel from the beginning, and I felt like this was one element where it really fell short for me.
I will not fault Mary Elizabeth Winstead specifically, because I think, as I mentioned in the first episode, I think it's so difficult to, like, first of all, she wasn't the original voice actor, but she's also trying to bring an animated character to life, and there's so many hindrances to that. I think obviously, the prosthetics she's wearing are really difficult. Like, for example, at the end, I'm like, why didn't, they let us see her and Ezra, hugging? And it's I don't know, maybe her, Leku would have fallen off, you know?
Yeah,
it's like, they're just like, there's so many constraints. Sorry, Grace, what were you saying?
No, I was just saying that bugged me so much. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, it's just in animation, and obviously we would have seen it. In this, I think it's we have to be really careful. Because we don't want them to fall off or something. So I think that obviously limits just normal movements. So it's kind of eerie looking. So I think that's the biggest drawback of her character. If I can go into a weird modesty rant, I really loved Hera's outfit in the animated series. In this one, the pants, very tight. Mm. To the point where which is not what they looked like in the cartoon. And that's not a bad thing, to begin with. I mean, I wear skinny jeans sometimes, but I think it was noticeable to people. There was a Reddit thread that I saw that has 600 upvotes or something. So other people noticed it. That was what is up with the constant butt shots in Ahsoka?
It was so true.
It's true. And it's frustrating because this is one of the first Star Wars shows that's led almost entirely by female women. And it's frustrating to me that that's such a noticeable vibe shift compared to how they would have done the filming for, or the costuming for a man, which I don't think the actress herself may have minded about it. I'm sure if she did, she could have talked to them about it. I don't know. I mean, obviously I can't speak for her, and I wouldn't want to say that it's an injustice if she doesn't care. But to me, it was kind of like annoying. obviously not a big deal in the grand scheme of things, but it's like, I don't know. I kind of like the aesthetic of it was just like a different shape of a pant
it felt more practical. I mean, it seemed like the kind of thing that you would actually wear if you were piloting a freighter.
Right. And you're not alone, Haley. I also noticed that there were a lot of shots of Harris specifically walking that would like pan up from her backside. And I also found it weird and oddly specific.
It's just funny to imagine them doing that kind of cinematography for like the male characters. we don't usually see that.
we do not. I think that also kind of highlights the larger problem, though. I mean, it seems so simple, just the pants, but also kind of feels like a fundamental misunderstanding of her character, because her piloting outfit is a practical piloting outfit, and then if it becomes more of a like form-fitting impractical outfit, not that there's anything wrong with that necessarily, it just kind of shows like they were trying to adapt her character in ways that weren't necessarily true to the character. It's like
Grace, we don't want the male viewers to be annoyed that this is like a female power show because all of the characters are women, so we're gonna like appease them in this way, and that like that's what I don't like.
No, I'm with you. I think it was a thing. I don't think you are weird to notice that.
Yeah, I'll obviously also agree that it was very strange, and I definitely did see those posts on Reddit and noticed that that was a thing that the internet was reacting to. So yes, I definitely found that pretty strange. I guess the only other thing I would say about Hera is I think that part of my frustration with how she was underused or misused or whatever is that she has the potential to play a really interesting role in the story of Ahsoka, and obviously, you know, Ezra's story once he comes back into the picture. She does have a few good moments where she's talking about like the challenges of mentorship, and she's talking about, you know, she's having to kind of make her case for why they should even care about Thrawn. She does have an interesting role in the universe at this moment in time. It's just that she didn't seem to have a really great role or a really great kind of place to fit in to this story, to this kind of depiction of this moment in time. So that was disappointing for me. But again, like I think I wanted to see more of her grappling with the burden of leadership and the burden of, much like Leia herself in this era, being one of the few people who is still beating the drum of, we need to be on guard, we need to be focused, we need to be vigilant. So I really like that. Anyone else want to add anything about Hera before we move on?
So I just wanted to briefly mention another element that I did not super love was the relationship with Jason, her son. And I was excited to see Jason and excited to see that relationship. But something about that relationship just didn't feel right to me. And I think part of it was the prosthetics or the makeup, because it made it difficult for her to have any facial expression. But he would say something and she would either like smile politely or just look at him with vague concern. And it did not seem to me in the episode where Jason can hear Ahsoka in the world between worlds, and he's like, I can hear them in the ocean, lightsabers, and she just looks at him.
Oh my god.
And then there has to be in the background David Tennant robot filling in for the non-Rebels viewers, like, his dad was a Jedi. It's just so awkward. And their relationship did not It did not click for me, and I found that a bit disappointing.
Okay, one thing on the positive side, I did appreciate watching her like deal with bureaucracy. I think, like, obviously in Rebels, she's kind of like, most of the show, she's like doing her own thing and sort of in charge of what she's choosing to do. And clearly she struggles with like following orders and dealing with senators who are very skeptical of the military-industrial complex. And I love that kind of like behind-the-scenes drama. So I thought that was a fun like subplot.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit about those scenes because, as folks know, one of the reasons that I am very interested in the Mandoverse shows that are set in this era is the New Republic lore, the world building, the depiction of the government starting to move toward that failure point in the Force Awakens. And, you know, the scenes with Hera where she's making the case to go look for Thrawn and then where she's brought back for a court-martial after going to look for Thrawn, these are two of my favorites in the entire series, and I think that they are some of the highlights of the show, some of the things that actually do work really well, because you do get to see the reasons why the Republic fell. You see folks like Senator Ziono basically dismissing Hera as a warmonger, and I just love this window into how the political class of the New Republic, already just a few years after the recreation of the Republic, they're already failing people. They're so desperate to move on from the war that they're not going to listen to any evidence that it's actually not over yet. And anybody who tries to kind of ruin this fantasy is dismissed as a warmonger. And, you know, it's not black and white, right? They're not wrong to be concerned about, you know, military veterans who can't let go of the glory days and who just want to, you know, create a war because they like fighting. Like, that's a real concern, but they take that too far. And I love the way that scene plays out and plays on those kind of civilian military tensions, which are always present in a government, but especially one that has been rebuilt from the ashes of fascism and that is trying to avoid the failures of the previous democratic government that led to the fascism. So all of that is wrapped up in here, and I do think it works really well. I guess my question for you two is, Hera is pretty antagonistic toward the senators. She gives as much as she gets, but I don't know that it's wise. I don't know that it's wise for her to antagonize these people who control not only her military service, but also the budget and strategy for the military that she's part of. And I'd love to hear your thoughts about how she handles this tete-a-tete with the senators, this clash with people who suspect her motives, as well as the actual intel that she's providing. Do you think she handles herself well here?
I mean, it's not great to, like, not believe in accountability and just have a, like, generally an anti, like, democratic streak, which I think is a fair description of the behavior that she was showing, and just sort of relying on someone who wasn't, like, tuned into any of this to just sort of, like, bail her out of that situation, which, of course, was Leia. I don't know. I think it's not great. but I do think it fits with her character from the show. I think that was one, like, continuity. I don't think it's good for governing to, like, clash that way instead of, like, trying to persuade. But, like, I don't know, maybe she's argued with this senator 70 times. She's just given up, you know?
Well, if that were the case, it would have been nice to have an indication of that in the story. Like, even
my
old
nemesis.
Line. So we meet again, Senator Ziono.
Ah, Senator Ziono, I remember our Zoom call last week where we had the same discussion.
No, but seriously, they could have done a throwaway line like that. I agree with Haley, you know, anti-democratic instincts in general, not the best. But I think the situation with the New Republic in general opens the door for a lot of nuance, and I don't thus far feel as if the Mandoverse has been really good at exploring those nuances. I think they're trying to, but in that scene, it just ends up looking like Hera is right. These senators are obviously feckless and stupid and short-sighted. And why don't they see the danger? And, you know, obviously it's like that in real life too. But I would have appreciated it to be a bit less obvious, I suppose. It just felt very unsubtle. And I think that every Mandoverse attempt to interject any kind of political nuance into the narrative, specifically regarding the New Republic, has been very unsubtle. And again, it's not like Star Wars has ever been subtle, really, with the exception of Andor. But I don't know if they're succeeding in doing what they're trying to do. And that's why New Republic plot lines always bother me, because I feel like they have very ambitious ideas, but aren't willing to commit to them beyond a very cursory glance at what these dynamics would be.
No, that's the thing, though. We know Dave Filoni probably has like so much backstory and lore for everything that's happening in the show, and we just don't get to see, like, understand what the details are until like someone has one line explaining that. Like, I don't know. I find it frustrating because I know he knows. There's there's a way to share that information with us, you know.
Yeah, and I'm ready to crowdfund a Star Wars politics show where we just focus on these exact political and military dynamics and the tensions that come from trying to build a democratic government while not falling prey to the problems of the previous one. But in the meantime, they've only got so much runtime. And I will say this, I agree with you, Grace, that it is that the storylines are not well served by the particular writers who are trying to write them and by the time constraints that they're being shoved into. That being said, I guess I'm a little bit more forgiving maybe than you are of the short shrift that they give to that subtlety. I would love that subtlety as well. I guess I'm a little more forgiving of the time constraints, and obviously they've got to address this because it's in the, well, it becomes the foreground of what Hera is doing, and it's the impetus for a lot of the story, is that some people think Thrawn is still out there and some people don't, so they have to address it in some way, and they don't have a ton of time to do it. But yeah, I mean, I think that actually one of my favorite things about Star Wars in this era is that you have a government that is a democratic government, but is born out of a rebel movement where there was a lot of individual initiative and people were, and there was a very clear good versus evil dynamic, and the war is now over, theoretically. The bad guys are theoretically gone, and so we have this clash of, we want, you know, we as viewers know that democracy is good and accountability for the military is good and important, but then as Star Wars fans, we also like rooting for characters who are predominantly military characters, and those are the heroes of the shows, especially Hera in this case, and the storytelling demands that the good guy, Hera, has to go up against an obstacle in the bureaucracy who doesn't believe her and disagrees with her, and so that has the effect of making those bureaucratic figures the villains in that scene, not, you know, Sith, but still villains to, or obstacles for Hera. And so you end up kind of in this uneasy situation where you're rooting against the democratic accountability almost, or some people are. I think the show wants you to side with Hera, as,
like,
you said,
go, Hera,
Grace.
Do whatever you want.
Exactly. And that's unhealthy ultimately in a real world context, because you can't have generals freelancing like that against the policy objectives of the government, and that's unhealthy, you know, in for a lot of reasons. You need democratic oversight. But I think Star Wars is interesting in that from the very beginning, it's really been the fans are rooting for characters who in a lot of ways kind of defy that kind of accountability, especially now when they're not just part of a rebel movement, they're actually now part of the responsible government. And I love that, and I want to see more of it, but I agree with you that the way that this does it, it does kind of have you rooting against democracy.
Yeah, and that's my issue, is because I'm okay for the show to want us to root against democracy. And what I mean there is that that would be a, if they were doing it properly, that would be a fun subversion and a way for the viewer to confront their own priors and thoughts about this subject. But by making it so obvious, and like, it's, it, they just make it clear that Hera's in the right and the senators are in the wrong. And I think it should be obvious to the viewers a little bit more that actually, no, Hera is in a little bit in the wrong here, and you can still root for her. And in fact, maybe you should root for her as a protagonist and as a supporter of what she's doing. But I don't know if the show understood that what she was feeling was not great. And again, maybe it's time constraints, maybe it's, you know, just the studio, all of the various strictures. But I would have appreciated a little bit more of an understanding that this was not a great tendency that Hera was demonstrating.
Yeah, and you know, I think, like I was saying, like, I think that there's just not room to kind of get into that nuance. I would hope that the, you know, that Dave Filoni is, you know, aware that, you know, ultimately we should be rooting for a democracy. I think he probably is, but I don't envy him having to cram this kind of nuance into, again, what is basically the B, or would we even say the C plot of this show. He doesn't have a lot of room to do it, but, you know, again, I'll reiterate, like, I would love to see these kinds of tensions about the mixture of, you know, democracy and oversight with initiative, you know, rebel style initiative. I would love to see that fleshed out and explored with a bit more nuance. The only other thing I'll say is I love Leia being the one to kind of come in and give Hera cover. And I love, because they both kind of recognize that there is still a lingering Imperial threat. They are allies in that sense. And this is where we see Leia using her political capital to kind of quietly help the people who she sees as allies. She eventually, of course, is ostracized and pushed out of, essentially pushed out of the Senate, for people think that she's a warmonger who is, you know, cashing in on her celebrity credibility in order to stump for increased military readiness. And you don't really see that in between the movies, obviously. It's explored in one of the very, very good novels. But this is actually, we're starting to see that in a way. And I really like that because, again, it makes sense that you would have Leia be an ally to Hera here. And obviously we can't have Carrie Fisher, but we had C-3PO, which is the next best thing. And even through C-3PO, we get to see Leia kind of outfoxing Senator Ziono with that ultimate Hail Mary maneuver, where she kind of makes a fake communications transcript and says, you know, are you going to question my integrity and say that I'm making all this up? And of course she is making it up. It's very vintage kind of Rebel Alliance behavior there, but she can use her position of authority to kind of say to Senator Ziono, like, hey, you excluded me from the kind of court-martial stuff. That's not okay. And she kind of puts him on the back foot. It's brilliant politics. You get to see that here really for the first time in this kind of detail. And I just really like that.
Yeah, I just feel like there is so much room for interesting stories. And I get frustrated every time a TV show, I mean, I guess this is true of any TV show, not just Star Wars, but perhaps because of my love for Star Wars, it just always makes me frustrated whenever you can glimpse that potential and then it isn't fulfilled, and it hurts all the more because you know it could have been there, but it was not.
Yeah, and again, I'll repeat, I'm ready to crowdfund a show that is just about these political dynamics. I think, Grace Haley, are you in as well? Should we start, you know, setting up a Patreon for that?
Of course.
I mean, yeah, let's set up a Hoth Takes Venmo.
I'll be able to quit my job.
Just work on this full time.
Yes, of course.
Oh, I would love that. Before we kind of get to, like, you know, looking ahead to season two and all that, I want to open up space for kind of any other thoughts that folks have about what we liked and what we didn't like about the first season of Ahsoka. I'll just throw out a couple. I love traveling to another galaxy. It feels very kind of old school Star Wars exploration. It opens up literally a lot of new space for them to tell stories. So I think that's very cool. I love the Purrgil and the Night Sisters kind of bringing in the kind of mystical, almost unknowable aspects of Star Wars. I've talked about this before, but like, I really like that idea that even in the Star Wars universe where we have things like the Force, there are things that are sort of beyond our ability to understand. And I guess Mortis kind of fits into that too. These are great examples of that kind of mystical, natural element of the universe coming into play. So I really like that. And I just have to shout out the music.
Yes.
So glad they brought back Kevin Kiner. The music is incredible. You know, Thrawn's got some good stuff. Ezra's got some good stuff. There's this very lighthearted theme that plays when Sabine first meets the Noti in the other galaxy. So that's great. The music is just incredible. I don't really have too much more to say about it. And then shout out to Hayden Christensen. We talked about in the last episode, but just, you know, really, really liked his role here. He did a great job. I love seeing him at the end, seeing Anakin kind of watching Ahsoka with pride. She is kind of the light side of his legacy, and I like that he's able to see her building on that. So those are some of the things that I enjoyed, but welcome other thoughts as well.
My number one thing I enjoy that I was going to mention was the music by Kevin Kiner, who also did the music for Clone Wars and Rebels. And I thought the music was really great and repeated a lot of the themes from Rebels, which was fun, particularly for Thrawn. But I would say music, number one, was what I was going to say. I also really enjoyed Hayden Christensen's performance. Liked seeing Chopper, the murder droid. Not enough Chopper for me. Not enough Night Sisters for me. I liked seeing a little bit more about where they came from, but I want it all. I love the witches. One other thing I liked. I liked the stormtrooper second for Thrawn, how he had a stormtrooper helmet with a like face plate. I thought that was super cool and freaky and weird, and I liked that a lot, that costuming choice.
Yeah, the production design for like Thrawn's army was great. The production design in general, I would say, was very good. By the way, did you like how like Chopper's one moment was suggesting a war crime, which is that Hera destroyed that giant transport ship over a populated area, which would almost certainly wipe out a ton of innocent people?
I mean, that's classic Chopper, though.
That's so Chopper. No, I agree with a lot of things you guys are saying, and as the resident like optimist, I do want to commend all of the people who were involved in production of the show. You worked very hard, and of course it was a very difficult task to bring a lot of animated characters to the real world. And like I said, I think so many of the shortcomings we're mentioning here are like rooted in those constraints. And I mean, like, our biggest complaint is we want like more. Right? Like, we want more details. We want the characters to talk to each other more. I think it's fun to like have been able to go to a different galaxy and sort of be able to explore whatever is going on with the Mount Rushmore of Force gods. I like the weirdness of that. So on that note, Eric, have you seen the theories about Shin, and somehow because she bears passing resemblance to the mother, that she will somehow be like, I don't know, taken over by the mother? I don't know. Have you seen that?
I have not seen that. Did we?
What mother?
There is a mother. I can't remember her name, but she's like the most evil person of all time and all powerful, and she's blonde. So
wait, is this in Clone? Where are we talking about here?
Oh, I'm gonna have to send this to you. Hold on.
Wait, you mean like the father, sister, and brother? There's a mother.
Let me find her name. Abeloth.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. So, all right. So, Abeloth is a weird space monster from the expanded universe, not connected to Mortis. But yeah, she was the villain, the big
bringer
bad
of chaos.
Yes, of the. Oh my god, of a very. of a very interesting 9-book series toward the end of the expanded universe. Abeloth is the character I will not miss from the expanded universe being thrown away. I think that's just about all I have to say about that.
She's coming back.
No, absolutely not. We're done with Abeloth. We don't need any more Abeloth. Actually, I did want to, speaking of Shin, I wanted to very briefly ask if you were as annoyed as I was by Shin stabbing Sabine in the stomach and then Sabine almost immediately recovering, thus completely cheapening the idea of getting stabbed in the stomach being a very, very bad thing in Star Wars. It feels like that's just kind
of... It's already been cheapened. We've seen the mod parlor.
The mod parlor, that's right.
Maybe that's what she did. She went to the mod parlor.
I thought that was very stupid. I mean, I understand you could say, oh, she didn't hit any vital organs. But, like, when you're quibbling about the details of the exact location of the lightsaber stab, you're ruining the narrative significance of getting stabbed in the stomach with a lightsaber, which should be fatal or much more gruesome than it was. Anyway, so bringing up Abeloth, as much as I hate it, does bring us to looking ahead to season 2. And I would like to know, as we wrap up here, what are your thoughts? What are your questions? What are the biggest questions for you as we look to season 2? What do you most want to know as we pick up the story here in a theoretical season 2?
Well, my biggest questions are related to Baylan and what he was doing at the Argonauth of the Force Gods. What is the Argonauth of the Force Gods? Sorry, that's the big statues from Lord of the Rings. I assume people who listen to this are familiar with the big statues of Lord of the Rings being called the Argonauth, but just in case, that's what they reminded me of. But I'd like to know whatever the heck he's up to and what his larger mission was. And that's really, really my biggest question. I really wasn't... I felt like I didn't leave with too many other open questions that I was truly engaged with, as much as wondering what's up with them. Oh, and wondering vaguely how Ahsoka and Sabine are going to get off the planet, but only really vaguely. And then wondering if they will ever show a hug between Hera and Ezra. These are my biggest quandaries.
Dave Filoni is going to listen to this episode, and the first scene of the first episode of season 2 will be them hugging. For me, this will come as no surprise, but what I would like to see in season 2 is a romance.
What? Ezra wants a romance?
A romance between Ezra and Sabine, because they belong together. Or at least to have to decide not to do a romance. Like, look... Real people fall in love, or they like almost fall in love, and then they're like, oh, that won't work. And it's like, it's not normal to not have any characters in your show not having those kinds of situations. So that's my opinion. That is what I would like to see.
I think that now that Ezra's back and Sabine is gone, Ezra should start wearing Sabine's clothes,
right?
And looking at hollows of her.
Well, he's best buds with the whales, the Purrgil. Feels like he should be able to get back pretty easily.
That would be a very funny first episode of season 2 if he's just like, he finds some whales and goes back and brings them home immediately. Talk about subverting expectations. You know what? I've heard worse ideas. I will say I'm also interested in seeing what happens to Shin, not because I really care about Shin, but more as a meta issue of like, well, you set this character up. You showed us where she was at the end of the season. Do you have a plan for her? Like, what do you want us to get out of having met her? So I'm interested to see if they do anything with her. Obviously, yes, interested to see what's going on with the Mortis gods. Are they actually still alive? I feel like we've glossed over the fact that, like, there's some kind of energy or presence related to them. It seemed like a pretty big deal in Clone Wars when they died, or transferred their essence into Ahsoka and Anakin or whatever happened. Like, if they're just back as independent beings, that seems like a very strange decision to make. But yeah, very interested to see what happens there. I'm also curious to see if we see more of the Night Sisters. They made a point of showing us Thrawn bringing them back to Dathomir, honoring his promise. Are they going to continue to be allies for him? We never figured out what was in those containers that they were loading onto the Star Destroyer.
Bodies.
Were they were Yeah, I mean, I think we're probably going to see some zombies. Like, I think probably those were the dead bodies of his soldiers, and they're going to bring more of them back and reanimate them. But that's just my guess. I think, you know, they've got a lot of interesting places they could go with season two if they make it. I guess another question is, how does it work timeline-wise with Dave Filoni's movie? Are Ahsoka and Sabine going to be absent for the events of that confrontation with Thrawn? I cannot imagine that that would happen, but I don't. Otherwise, you've got to do a season two before you do that movie, and I'm not sure what the timing is here, but that seems like it would really delay the movie. So I'll be very interested to see what happens there. Okay, well, thank you so much for listening to Hoth Takes. If you want to share your thoughts about this episode or suggest topics for future shows, you can email us at hothtakes@gmail.com, or you can find us on Twitter. We are at Hoth Takes. I'm Eric Geller on Twitter. Grace is Grace_Seegers, and Haley is Burdenator. Haley made our wonderful logo and banner art, and I edited the show and put together our music, although, again, for legal purposes, we do want to point out that all Star Wars music and sound effects do remain the intellectual property of Lucasfilm. If you want to listen to previous episodes of Hoth Takes, including our first episode on Ahsoka Season 1, you can find all of them on our website, hothtakes.wordpress.com. And hey, if you like the show, please share it with a friend. You can find Hoth Takes on all the major podcasting platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. We'll see you next time. May the Force be with you.